Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Fulilove, Executive Director of the Lowy Institute, and I acknowledge that we're gathered on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and I pay my respect to their elders past and present. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our headquarters, our spiritual home at 31 Bly Street. It's wonderful to return to this beautiful building after 4 years down the road at number one. The PM was saying to me on the way down, this building feels so real, it feels so solid, and we love being back here. And I'm very pleased to welcome you all, and especially the PM, to 31 Bly Street to address us, the Honourable James Marape, MP, the new Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea. And we're honoured that the PM has chosen the Institute as the venue for his first major international address. I told the PM before, we've had huge media interest in this event, actually more media interest than any event since we hosted Boris Johnson in 2017, another new Prime Minister. I don't know if that comparison is helpful or not, Prime Minister, but it shows the level of interest in your visit. Mr. Marape assumed the office of Prime Minister on the 30th of May this year. He is a prominent leader from the Highlands. He's a powerful force in the country's parliament, which he first entered in 2007. Mr. Marape served as Minister for Education and Minister for Finance until this year, when PNG's parliament elected him the country's eighth Prime Minister with the support of 101 of the 111 MPs in the House. So he knows how to do the numbers. Prime Minister Marape has been busy over the past 6 weeks, unveiling a new look cabinet, putting corporations on notice that he will aggressively pursue the national interest and taking steps to tackle corruption. He's also using Facebook to give the people of Papua New Guinea direct insights into his thinking. The world holds its breath every time Mr. Trump sends his tweets, but the PM is much more measured in his use of social media. PM, here at the Institute, as you know, we have a very busy program of engagement with Papua New Guinea and the Pacific. In 2016, for example, we released a Lowy Institute paper by the legendary foreign correspondent and Lowy Institute non-resident fellow Sean Dorney, the embarrassed colonialist, detailing the history of the relationship between our two countries. In 2017, we released a comprehensive report, Seven Snapshots of a Nation, detailing the contemporary challenges and opportunities facing PNG. Last year, we launched the Institute's Pacific Aid Map, which illuminates all aid flows to the PNG and the broader Pacific. We have new research publications coming out soon, covering issues from Bougainville to Pacific debt sustainability. We have a very active program of engaging also with Papua New Guinea's emerging leaders, and we'll be going up to Papua New Guinea in November for the latest instalment in that series. And I'd like to congratulate our program head, Jonathan Pryke, and the whole team, including Shane McLeod, Alexandra Dayant, and Wat Namori, for the really remarkable work that they do here at the Institute. We hosted Mr. Marape's predecessor, Peter Neal, on several occasions, as well as Charles Abel just last year, and I'm delighted that we're able to continue the tradition with you, Prime Minister. So thank you again, Mr. Marape, for agreeing to speak to us. After his speech, the PM has agreed to take a few questions, but in the meantime, let me ask the Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea to join us at the lectern. Thank you, PM.
All right, thank you, Michael, for those kind words, and thank you for welcoming me on this occasion. But more importantly, thank you for accepting me to be speaking in this very, very renowned and auspicious forum and the Institute. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, thank you for the opportunity once again to speak to every one of you about the important changes that we, myself and my generation of leaders, are trying to initiate in Papua New Guinea as we speak. As you know, and as indicated by Michael, I was elected into the current position as the eighth Prime Minister of our country on the 30th of May, and it is dubbed the greatest honor that's ever accorded to me and my family, my tribe, and of which I give greatest thank and appreciation to God, and also to the members of Parliament, the 101 members and the people they represent, for the greatest honor and privilege accorded to me. Before I proceed, I would like to also thank Prime Minister Scott Morrison for inviting me and my delegation to Australia in the first instance. I received few invitations to visit other states or other countries, but it wasn't coincidental or it wasn't accidental. We deliberately chose to visit Australia as my first official visit offshore by virtue of the fact that we believe our relationship with Australia stands as the greatest or the most important bilateral relationship we have, and we did visit Australia. And I am very, very happy to announce that Prime Minister Morrison was very warm and cordial, but more importantly, Canberra, on a chilly Sunday and Monday, Canberra was very warm and cordial to receive the delegation that I led into. This confirms or affirms the warmth and significant relationships we have, and the view and feelings both nations place on each other. The title of my speech today is A New Book for Papua New Guinea. And like all good books, the first chapter is very, very important. It sets the pace and tone for preceding chapters. My government includes many, many young, educated leaders who, together with me, fought and fostered change that took place and saw my ascension into office as Prime Minister. Ladies and gentlemen, Papua New Guinea is at the crossroads. The old book belongs to the past 44 years and is littered with chapters of many failures and also few successes in between. And for me, that is history and that is their story. We anticipate to anchor a new book for the next 44 years from lessons learned from the first book. Amidst many pronounced failures, including systematic weaknesses of service delivery, PNG, a nation of over 830 tribal and language groups, have maintained a united democratic system of government, a functional and independent judiciary, and has managed to survive thus far as a united democratic country. And for me, that is the greatest achievement we have done in the last 44 years. We have developed a vibrant economy. We have refined our political systems. We have enhanced democratic processes and the rule of law, and have made great headway in addressing the development challenges of the most geographically and culturally diverse nation on planet Earth. But it is clear to me, and must be clear to all who care to listen, that the new generation of leaders I lead, and on behalf of our people, demand change of course for the better, because what we have done thus far as a nation has been inequitable and disproportionate to our natural resource extraction thus far. In a country where population growth trends above economic growth or GDP, our annual budget provisions continues to be far less than the actual need for development. It is now time to do things differently. Generational change demands a change in modus operandi. Now is the time to embrace economic opportunity so that we can provide for all our people, both today and for generations to come. We have a responsibility to ensure we invest in our future so that our children, their children, and those generations that will come beyond will have a strong foundation to live their lives. My generation of leaders, ladies and gentlemen, will seize tools and competitive advantages that are there for our disposal. We live in a world of ICT technology, and embracing digital economy, embracing that PNG's place in a very strategic hub in the middle of Asia and Pacific, in the middle of what Vice President Mike Pence coined last year in APEC as Indo-Pacific region, our country, which continues to be high yield investment destination for many of our business and foreign investors. Those opportunities are there for our present crop of leaders and our country to harness from and gain from. And we look forward to waste no time. And we look forward to embrace changes that we intend to make, because the opportunity cost of deferring changes and making change for the better will not only haunt PNG, but also affect countries in the region, including Australia, who continues to support us every year in as far as aid is concerned. The simple fact is that for too long we've allowed external forces to dictate the direction we take, and this will now change as we sit together to carve out a new future for our country. We will move from an introduced culture of dependency and complacency, where we will rely on overseas aid and inward investment alone, to one where we become vibrant economic powerhouse and are totally economically independent by expansion and diversification of our economic base. This means that we must advance for the interests of our people, create opportunities for growth. We must work with responsive economic partners and ensure a fair and equitable distribution of our resources. We must embrace reform, including policies and tweaking resource laws and institutions in all sectors that ensures our national net take home, whether in tax or equity or royalties, for every resources add up to about 50%. But gaining more for our national coffers without stopping wastage through corruption and complacency will be injustice and efforts in vain. Therefore, we must and will stamp out corruption. We must and will build institutional and governance frameworks that support sustained development, both now and in the years and decades to come. Through all of this, it is my dream that Papua New Guinea becomes the richest Black Christian nation on earth. This, ladies and gentlemen, has nothing to do with race whatsoever, or has nothing to do with religion whatsoever. Black connotes where we are or where we have come from. Rich connotes the destination we want to take our nation to. And the use of word Christianity inside connotes strategies that we will deploy, strategies that entails love, respect, care, forgiveness, tolerance, and sharing of wealth to every corner of our nation, including our partners. This is because God has blessed PNG with so much endowment. Our natural resources are so abundant, second to none, globally speaking. And by investing in correct strategies today, we have the capacity to harness those resources for the benefit of all present today and generations to come. We must and will examine ways to harness and unlock our natural resources. We must and will make use of local talent from our human resource pools, some of whom are so competent that they're working internationally, including Australia. And at this juncture, let me say, two nights ago, I was so encouraged to see more than 300 Papua New Guineans and their family who came out in Perth to meet my delegation. And they were so excited, and you could see excitement in the eyes. But more importantly for me, I felt encouraged that competent Papua New Guineans are working amongst the best in Australia in the various sectors they were engaged in, most in the mining and oil and gas sector, but some also in the social service sectors. In short, we must take back our country, our economy, and seize our own destiny, for no one else will do it for us. As with any maturing democracy, this means that we need to change our focus. This is why I am so pleased that during our discussions with Prime Minister Scott Morrison, we were able to agree to a comprehensive strategic and economic partnership, where as equals we will work together to tackle the major challenges that face both our nations in the pristine Pacific region. This is where Australians' commitment to infrastructure support is sincerely appreciated. Our partnership with us to enhance the electrification and telecommunication capacity, as he announced, is very much welcome and appreciated. These are key economic enablers that will allow our economy to grow. And of course, Australia continues to assist us in areas of health and education and police and defense, amongst many other corporations that they continue to support. But in my view, in 10 years or so, we don't want to be aid dependent. We want to be equal partners with Australia in supporting our region, a region that we all live in, the Pacific region. I don't envisage a relationship that is donor aid recipient, but a relationship of mutual trade, benefit sharing relationship, and that is something that I clearly express to Prime Minister Morrison and something that we will work to enhance going into the future. This is the new chapter of the new book I want to write for my country. Now is the time to take the step where we achieve true economic independence and dependence and determine what our future should be going forward in a rich, in a country that is so blessed with so much resources. We can stand up as an economic powerhouse in the region and instead of being an aid-dependent nation that has been for the last 44 years. We will invest in technology and embrace innovation. We will invest in downstream processing and manufacturing capabilities and develop human capital with appropriate skill to drive and fully industrialize our economy. This is vital for economic survival and an integral part of our plan for achieving long-term sustainable development. We have a population of 8 million that is growing by the year at a rate of 3.2%. We need to diversify our economy to sustain or at least serve that population growth rate. Having said this, we have a pool of committed and capable workers. I believe now is the time to harness that opportunity, create revenue, generate growth, enable wealth creation for all these people that come under the care of our government. But to achieve full economic independence, we need to change the mindset of our people, as well as those that seek to control or influence us. Developers must become more attuned to our unique needs. We must and will empower our provinces to raise their own revenue and stimulate economic growth. And as some of you would know, I have 5 governors with me. These governors were part of my trip in the last 2 or 3 days. And it's part of my view that power mustn't be centered in Waigani, or seat of government in Waigani. Power must be devolved to the provinces. And this is something that we are trying to refine as a nation going forward, so that our provinces, 22 of them, are deciding their own destiny and to assist Waigani to look after our people. We must overcome the rural divide and entrapment of our people by ensuring that we create equal opportunity for all, where any person, man or woman, can achieve his or her full potential. And as I speak on rural entrapment, PNG is one of the highest in terms of ratio, people living in the rural areas. 80% or so of Papua New Guineans live in the rural areas, and only 20% or so live in the urban areas. This means that we must and will harness the collective contributions and capacity of our citizens. We must provide an environment where quality education and health care are available at all levels and where all Papua New Guineans can fulfill their true potential, regardless of where they are or where they have come from. Embarking upon a process of substantial social, economic, and structural reform cannot be achieved overnight, and it cannot be achieved by one man alone. It requires a team effort. And as I have said on many times, I do not have answers for every problem that may arise. That is why, as Prime Minister, I am consulting widely, and part of the engagement tonight is part of this consultation process. I am reaching across both sides of political aisles to draw on to make use of the greatest talent available to us in Papua New Guinea. The ministers I have appointed in my cabinet have been selected based on merits. And as Prime Minister, I expect them to deliver to the challenges and tasks that lies ahead of us. All ministers will have a collective sense of belief that their roles and their contributions can have a positive effect to our country. I've announced to my cabinet there is no place for self-interest in the government I lead. And those who seek self-interest and profit from offices or public offices will find no place in my cabinet and will face the full brunt of the law. Our people have had enough, and now is the time to tackle cancer of corruption that has taken hold using power or prosecution or every other means. My government stands to dispose and get rid of corruption in our system of government. As a first step, the government is currently undertaking a comprehensive diagnostic on our law and order capacity and other critical areas of social service. And as Prime Minister, I want to assure that we have right services available in the right place to meet the needs of all our people. This requires that we review our current law and order and service delivery footprint so that we can determine where new investment may be required and where needs may have to be, where we may have to change. I want to reform and reconstruct and rehabilitate a system of government that is presently so cumbersome and that is in itself so endemically weak in the manner in which it is delivering services to our people, including the presence of corruption in the system of government we have up there. As Prime Minister, it is my intention to reform the public service to be leaner, efficient, effective, and ethical. The waste must stop. Service must be guided by economic drivers and social need, not by misguided or uninformed policy. Previously, as Finance Minister, I did initiate a number of reforms to bring greater accountability to our public service. And this process of reform will continue, and I have tasked our Public Service Minister to take charge of these reforms, especially in the public sector. We must create, or we will create, a leaner public service that provides more joined-up government services and reduces unnecessary duplication and, where necessary, outsource or establish partnership with private sector and the churches. Our public servant must be properly equipped with skills that they need to do their jobs more efficiently, effectively, and ethically, and we must place services and people where they are most needed. By investing in our public servants, by ensuring that they are skilled and given the right tools, I know I can help truly make PNG move in the right place, because public servants are the drivers of change, and it is not politicians like me. I envisage public servants to deliver to our country a population that is truly fully educated, where sick patients are treated and infrastructure is developed world-class, and where the rule of law is prevails into the future. A key priority for government is to finalize, amongst some of the changes we're doing, is to finalize the Independent Commission Against Corruption. I have asked our Deputy Prime Minister and the Minister for Justice and Attorney General, this is one of our utmost priority. The Independent Commission Against Corruption will be established at the earliest to ensure that this is part of our economy, part of our democracy going forward, and to signal to investors and everyone who wants to do business with PNG that we have matured as a fully mature democracy. As I have said already, as Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea, I want to provide an opportunity for all. Most of you would know by now, as I said earlier, 80% of our people live in the rural enclaves. They live as subsistence farmers. They live simple lives. But living simple life doesn't mean they don't have potentials. Key amongst that is they have assets. They have land. You will find our country and our citizens have ownership of a piece of real estate. You go globally speaking, you find, name me one other country in the world that has almost every citizen owning a piece of real estate. Every Papua New Guineans you see today has a little bit of real estate back home. Everyone owns right to a land somewhere. Unleashing that potential, linking them from informal subsistence economy to the formal economy, is something that we are looking very seriously to bring those talents and to bring those resources that are presently unused into the formal economy and the formal economy space. PNG is blessed with fertile soil. PNG is blessed with everyone owning a piece of real estate. So doing it smarter, linking to smart business practice and linking our citizens who own land into earning more from the land and resource they own should be the way to go for us in maximizing economic gain as well as reinvesting in renewable and sustainable resources. I am envisaging an economy that is more rural and agriculture-based. We must grow a primary producer sector, supporting our people to rise above poverty level and engaging them in that, and bridging the divide will ensure they come out of poverty and come out of almost subsistence livelihood into a formal economy. As a government, we'll be looking forward to creating an economic corridors where infrastructures we develop will lead towards where the coffee is, where the copper is, where the oil palm is, and where the agricultural produce and the economic activities are for our people, including tourism opportunities. We will work to provide the market opportunities for our people, and we will empower people to be open, to open up to the world, and we will link our produces to markets that are opening up, not only in Australia or immediate region, but externally. And some of you would know by now, our tunas are exported to Europe. We are 25% supplier of the world's tuna supply. Our forests are being exported in the region, and speaking on forests alone, we will sign a moratorium that there will be no more runlock export in 2020 and beyond for those who have been in that industry for a long time. Speaking about industries and attracting foreign investors, we will also work with our multinational commercial partners. I have said to our partners many times, our key major investors, you have nothing to fear our government. Our government is pro-investment, but you must win for your shareholders, and we must also win for our shareholders, the 8 million people of Papua New Guinea. And in this, we recognize the importance of economic partnership and to work together so that we both are winning for. I win for my shareholders and they win for their shareholders. I have said on many occasions, we will respect and honor existing project agreements, and at no one time have I said we will compromise project agreements amongst our major resource developers in our country. But there is a caveat, so long as those project agreements and understandings are consistent with our laws and are in compliance with our laws that we have at the moment. But I, at the same time, have said for prospective going forward as a country, we will be reviewing some of the public policies we have, and we will be reviewing our laws we have so that we allow for best practices, capturing contemporary PNG needs, and repositioning our country so that the laws we are amending will bring in more resources into our economy going forward. I've assembled already a first pool of Papua New Guinean advisors who are looking into those resource laws and ensuring that we find the right balance. We don't harm our foreign investors, but we also maximize gain where we can, and especially in areas of local content, areas of domestic market obligations in the oil and gas space, areas where we can push and ramp up downstream processing. These are areas we're looking at so that we can gain from resources and add value to the resources we have in our country so that we can too contribute in building a better and stronger economy going into the future. This review is the fairest and right thing to do. By not doing so, we'll be doing injustice to the call and demand for greater services that our people so want. By empowering our country, we are also consolidating and securing those resource projects and the developers and operators who live and operate in our country for so long. Local participation ensures project security, and our country also has one or two experiences of projects being destroyed because local citizens and people feel they've been left behind. So as I speak, our team of advisors are trying to pull together a tailored mix of policies that is not only unique to PNG, but captures the best mixes where many of our majors who are operating in PNG also are familiar with, so that we can both win in every front. They win and we win as a common catch cry that I've always been making mention of. That is the undercurrent presently prevalent amongst the leaders that I lead. That is the undercurrent presently prevalent amongst our people, for our people still feel, amidst ownership of many of the resource projects we have and the major oil companies and the major mining companies that operate in our country, our human development index has not changed a little bit, one bit in our country. In fact, it has gone from bad to worse. And so we're in the business of trying to improve this. And when I speak about making PNG the richest black Christian nation, it's all about making sure our country gets better, and we are improving in our HDA indexes and improving in our economic indexes, so to speak. What I am proposing is a new and holistic economic and social partnership, one that gains opportunity for all and not just a few. Foreign investors are encouraged and welcome to operate in our country as they've been, and we've been operating in partnership with many of our foreign investors very well for a long, long time, and I'm sure they are cognizant to the needs that is prevalent in our society, and they are in close discussions with myself and many of the key sector ministers, but I've changed a little bit in the way we will be doing business. Previously, my predecessor and others were talking directly to investors. I've now shifted away, allowing our public service and our system to generate discussions and ensuring that we are getting the right discussions at various levels before project agreements are signed. We'll be working to ensure investors are also appreciated, and at no time am I indicating that we will be very hard on investors, but finding the right balance is the way to go for us. PNG will be turning 50 years in 2025. And what do we bring to the occasion as we celebrate 50 years of independence? Our story must be good for the amount of gold we continue to produce. Our story must be good for the amount of oil we continue to produce. Our story must be good for the amount of timber that is cut and shipped offshore. Our story must be good for the amount of fish that is shipped out of our country. Our story must be good for the amount of agricultural potential and propensity we have in PNG. So when we talk about trying to see into our resource law space and the public policies and the laws that we have, it is talking in that regard, that our nation hasn't fully benefited from the resources we have up there. And it's not really nothing to do with the investors, it's more to do with how we have come as a government and the way we've been doing business. So, as I said earlier in my conversation, government will be looking at stepping up efficiency in our public service and the way we deal business, focusing on fighting corruption, focusing on having an effective public service that is delivering, but at the same time, converting our resources into greater return to our economy so that we can match or support funding our budget and giving and saving to our people. These laws and policies that we'll be looking at will be, you know, will be cognizant to best practice, globally speaking, so that we can all harness properly and gain from our resources together with our investors. Now let me focus a little bit on one of my priority and my signature priority for our government going forward. Agriculture is and will be the focus of my government going forward. And if there is any one of you looking at a place to invest in PNG and want to get a great and fair deal of government support in terms of incentive is concerned, then you would not go wrong in bringing your proposals in the agricultural space. When I talk about agriculture, I look at Greater Asia. There's 3 billion people who need to drink a cup of coffee a day. There are 3 billion people who will need to eat a plate of rice a day, at least, minimum speaking. And so someone needs to grow the rice and someone needs to grow the coffee. And someone needs to plant the food to supply the Asian people. And the total production of agricultural produce in Australia, New Zealand, and PNG alone will not be sufficient to satisfy the need for Asia to be fed with food. Global climate changes and many weather patterns and population growth in Asia will mean Asia will need more food into the future. And PNG stands ready to prepare our nation as a food basket of Asia. And something that I'm putting out is organic food that we can supply. You pick up a banana, and for those of you who've been to PNG, you pick up a banana or you pick up a pineapple or pawpaw that is grown in PNG, second to none, globally speaking. We have very rich organic food in PNG, and I want to supply the Asian market with organic food into the future. And I point my country towards agriculture, and in 2025 and beyond, I don't want PNG to be known as an oil and gas and gold country. I want PNG to be known as a country that is the food basket of Asia, so to speak. Investing in food will return a lot of dividend for our nation. Investing in food will secure our nation not only of food security, but more importantly, of economic activities that my people who own land can be participating in that sector. So we're looking to invest in agriculture in a substantial way, and I'm pointing for investors who are out there with money to invest in. You will attract the right government incentive if you come to us and want to partner us in the space of agriculture. Whilst speaking on Asia, I also am positive in the need for Asian consumables. There's a huge need for energy and resources in Asia also, and that is where PNG and Australia and the Pacific can also stand to supply. And for PNG, one of our own domestic needs, we are looking to ensure that we have utilizing gas and other energy sources, cheaper and reliable power, and cheaper and reliable communication. And in this instance, let me thank Australia government for the investment in the fiber optic cables that runs through Port Moresby. And this will also contribute towards cheaper communication in our country. To conclude, let me say change is coming, change has arrived in PNG. What has transpired in my ascension into office has little to do with me, but a greater indication of young generation of Papua New Guineans who are highly educated, who are conversant with world's best practice. They have arrived at stage, and they are also very responsible, finding the right balance between our investors on one side and our citizens in our country on the other side, and ensuring that we gain more from our natural resources so that we truly make PNG a better place is our intention. Now, why talk about PNG as a better place? In case some of you are not too familiar with PNG, PNG has about 30% of world's languages, firstly, and that's something that we are commonly known for. But secondly, we have 6 to 7% of world's biodiversity. That's a global asset we have in that small island called PNG. Biodiversity contains world's answer to science and medicine and health, and the future of world study is also contained in that area. Preserving that 6 to 7% of world's biodiversity is important. It may not sound important today in a world of commerce and a haste to capitalize on gain or find money, but my humble view is preserving that biodiversity is our contribution to global heritage. We also, in partnering with South Pacific and the Pacific Group of Nations, occupy a substantial chunk of the world map. Our oceans are a great carbon sink. So together with other group of nations in Pacific, we occupy a substantial chunk of the oceans of planet Earth. Our forest in PNG is second only to the Amazon region in South America. That, again, is a factory of oxygen you all need and we all need to survive. Second, 12 to 13% of world's known tropical rainforest is found in PNG. And in the haste for commerce and commercialization, and in the haste to translate our resources to cash for the need for development, PNG stands to lose out in preserving some of those global heritages we have in our country. So finding the right pitch in other economic sectors, in other resource sectors, so that we sustain and keep some of this global heritage in our country is really the most responsible thing. We can contribute not only to the world, but more importantly, to peace, safety, security, and sovereignty of the Pacific region. And as a responsible government, responsible to the global heritage, but more importantly, responsible to our own citizens and their needs, we are trying our best to find the right policy metrics and right development mix to ensure we harvest our resources in the most prudent and sustainable manner, winning more we can win for our country, and also at the same time our investors winning for their shareholders. And hopefully as we speak and into the future, you can have up north of Australia, a country that is truly economically independent and self-sustaining. A country I envisage or I see into the future, a country that preserves its pristine environment and clear crystal waters, our ocean that must be filled with fish, our forest that still must be floods in its greenest form, and a country that is truly lived by citizens who are wealthy and affluent, not only in terms of money, but more importantly in manner and are satisfied in their life, because government has translated gains from resources presently harvested and reinvest back into education, into health, and into sustainable business activities that can make people be self-sufficient than government-dependent as it is today. Ladies and gentlemen, I've tried my very best to summarize everything that has been prepared for me, but look, I am prepared to take one or two questions. As I said earlier, PNG is a nation so endowed and blessed with so many natural resources, but the first book of the first 44 years of our nation's life has been filled with so much wasted opportunity, missed opportunities, so many failures amid few success. And a few success really can be evident in the fact that we still are living as an independent single nation. We haven't failed yet as a failed state, and the potential and opportunity for us to reclaim our fullest potential is there, and this group of leaders combined with myself are geared towards working hard without harming our investors, finding the right pitch and the right balance in ensuring that we gain more from our resources going forward. We're open for business. Anyone who wants to do business up there, our judiciary system is so independent from the politicians like me. In fact, if you were to ask who is more powerful, I will tell you our Chief Justice is more powerful than the Prime Minister. So anyone is most very much welcome to come and do business up there. We have changed now for the better, but we will be trying our very best to gain more and share to our people, so that when our people are healthy and happy, then every one of us are happy and healthy in the process. To Lowy Institute, Michael, Jonathan, and everyone here, thank you for inviting me. I know I haven't been too kind with time. I've spoken long this afternoon, but look, thank you very much for the invitation. I look forward to further engagements with yourselves, you know, anyone who want to ask one or two questions. But as I said earlier, PNG is a country full of opportunity. We have shown we can attract investors of past. We are here to continue attracting investors who want to do business with us. And if there's something that you take on tonight, I'm pointing to agriculture for PNG. Come and invest in agriculture. That is where the greatest strength of PNG is, our fish and agriculture. Everyone needs to eat food every day. You don't need to drink gold or oil or gas every day. You need to eat food. And Asian marketplace is there for us to supply. Come and partner us, invest in agriculture. You can be satisfied and you will return more for your shareholders. God bless. Thank you very much.
You stay at the lectern, PM.
Prime Minister, thank you for that very wide-ranging and sincere speech. You spoke about writing a new chapter in the book that is PNG's history, so thank you for writing one of the first paragraphs in the new chapter here at the Institute. The PM has agreed to take questions, and I think we've got about 10 or 15 minutes. So I'll come to the audience in a minute. I want to fit in as many questions as I can, so I'll ask you to put your hand up, wait for the microphone, tell us your affiliation before you ask your question, and please keep your question brief. But first, I'm going to ask the first question. PM, you talked, as is appropriate, about Papua New Guinea, but can I ask you about Australia? Australia is in the middle of a step up in the Pacific, which means more aid, more finance, more resources, more diplomats to the Pacific. PNG is a huge component of the Pacific. How is Australia perceived in our immediate region, and what can we do better as part of this step up?
Without coming into the Australian view on what the definition of step up is, I think it is proper that, and it is fair that Australia is showing interest or renewing the interest to ensure that they interface more with our Pacific neighbours. PNG is 80% of the Pacific population. PNG is the biggest Pacific nation, so to speak, but both PNG and Australia has great affinity for our lesser known or lesser populated Pacific island countries. They're very, very vulnerable and exposed to many of the contemporary issues facing us, including the effect of climate change. And so it's fair for Australia to wanting to step up to deal with Pacific nations. I think they've been always there in the presence of us in the Pacific all along. But as I said earlier in my speech, for PNG, we welcome every support Australia can give, but in 10 years' time, I want to assist Australia also saving the rest of Pacific. And as you could have heard from my tone of communication this afternoon, we are working towards economic independence ourselves in PNG. We don't want to be independent 10 years from now. We want to be participating with Australia, sharing responsibility, looking after smaller island nations amongst us in Pacific. And Australia has done by its own free will and good gesture. Every contribution to other countries is not taken for granted or taken lightly. We don't deserve their support in the first instance. They continue to do so at their own goodwill of heart and kind gesture. And for PNG to Australia, let me also place, we appreciate every help they give us. But on the same token, let me also, it would be unfair of me not to place on record that PNG is the greatest place of Australian businessmen and their investments. Over 5,000 Australian companies operate in PNG. Over $17 billion worth of investment Australian companies have in PNG. And there's a continual imbalance of trade between Australia and PNG. The other day I was asking this question: how comes my tunas are going to easily to the European markets and not finding their way into PNG market? So we have some issues. We have, sorry, Australian market. I beg your pardon. So we have some issues to go in that space. Prime Minister Morrison was very, very kind. He acknowledged those issues to and they need to reconcile. So they step up towards Pacific, in my view. They may have their specific relations to the rest of the smaller, vulnerable Pacific Island nations, but for PNG, I like a step up from the economic perspective. We need to balance the present trade deficit we have within PNG and Australia.
All right, thank you. First of all, I'm going to call on Wat Namori, who's a research associate at the Lowy Institute and is also from the Southern Highlands region, PM.
Hi. Firstly, Mr. Marape, congratulations on your prime ministership. I'm actually from Western Highlands in Chimbu province. Thank you, Michael. I feel the hope that PNG has in your prime ministership, in your government, is palpable both in PNG and in Australia. And we can see that with the diaspora as you've been visiting. And right now, I think outside there are people waiting, hoping to see you. So, thank you. We have a lot of hope in your government, and your speech today definitely reinstated that hope that we have. Many of the issues that you raise and that PNG currently faces are issues that we've faced for a while, and past governments have looked at them and have directed public officers and quite knowledgeable Papua New Guineans to address them, and there have been reports and recommendations produced on them, yet in 2019 we're still talking about the same issues because those reports and recommendations haven't been acted upon. My question is your government willing to look at all these reports and recommendations and implement them in your term? Thank you.
All right, good questions. Politicians like me will outlay the recent statement, and public servants are asked to ensure that they are translated. Next month, I have summoned every secretary of departments and every agency head to give me the game plan or the blueprint as to how they will assist us current leadership to move this our country from where we are today to the next level. And so I think in the first step, I've asked all our department heads to finish to us their game plan. And doesn't matter which stage of contract they are engaged in their current employment, but if they don't subscribe to the way we want to translate our visions to actually tangible, workable strategies, then some of them will not have any jobs. And that is how serious we are. And in the first instance, before September, you will see we will have assessed every performance of our public service heads. We have many department heads who currently earn salary and possibly are not contributing. We want our public servants and politicians to think beyond their pay salary and pay grade. We are giving long-range visions. I have absolute conviction in my heart that as a nation of many blessings, if we work every step diligently and faithfully, we can truly make PNG a very, very strong, robust economy, strong performing country. And as I said earlier, the blessing of having PNG as a successful country will transcend and benefit the region. The Pacific will benefit from it. Australia will have a stronger neighbor up north. You don't have to worry about your border securities up north because we will be looking after it up north. So having strong PNG will ensure that the region is safe and strong. And it is in the interest of everyone that we get to work this. And, you know, I told many of my compatriots and colleagues and even people that we visit, don't give me laces and flowers and gifts today. Reserve that for 10 years from now. And in 10 years, if we don't deliver, then you can rubbish me. But let's reserve those commendations and laces and gifts further down the line, but we will get to work. And if it means getting some people who are complacent off from our team, whether as ministers or as secretaries, then I'm willing to work the hard yard. And my ministers knows this already. Their very first cabinet with me, I was privileged to have worked with two prime ministers before, Prime Minister Somare and Prime Minister O'Neill. And they don't give ministers KPIs. In my first cabinet, I gave ministers KPIs, what I expect them to deliver for their respective departments. And that shows how serious we are, because time is not on our side. The opportunity cost of not working today will be passed on, and the burden will be passed on to the next generation. I don't want to pass burden of ineffective government to the next generation.
Hello, Prime Minister Marape. I'm Helen Davidson from The Guardian Australia. I wanted to ask about the regional processing agreement between PNG and Australia, that it's evolved into a situation that neither country expected more than 6 years later. My question for you is, given the dissatisfaction that's been brought to many members of the PNG community, particularly on Manus, the lack of opportunity for PNG businesses, and multiple cases of refugees and asylum seekers for who there is no apparent plan, how do you see it ending? And would your government consider accepting the New Zealand offer, given the Australian government has said that the refugees are your government's responsibility?
Well, New Zealand or USA or any nation who offers to help, we are willing to assist them and resettle these those who are in PNG now as refugees. As you would know by now, there are two classifications of people now in PNG. One are refugees and one are non-refugees. So those who fill in qualify as refugees will be working towards resettling them. And the next PNG and Australia Ministers Forum will be, this will be in one of the discussion agendas, that timetable to bring this asylum seeker to conclusion, as well as the details of transfers or details of relocation will be fully discussed at the ministerial meetings. Both myself and Prime Minister Morrison have agreed that we need to bring this to a closer, and he's very responsible to support me in our endeavour to bring the asylum seeker to closer. We're happy that New Zealand has shown interest to accept some of those who are still in Manus or in Port Moresby. As I did indicate in Canberra on Monday, no more detention in Manus, but we have those people who've been in the asylum refugee camp, all walking in and out freely in Manus, and some have come to Port Moresby for medical, also in Port Moresby. So our government want to bring it to conclusion at the very earliest, but we're mindful of different circumstances that are out there, and to really ensure that those who are in PNG find resettlement at the earliest and at its best for all parties is something that we are mindful about, so that we do not step on each other's toe in the process. But as I said earlier, my intention is to bring this matter to conclusion at the very, very earliest.
We'll take one final question from this gentleman here.
Prime Minister Marape, Okukumori Rogerson. I live in Sydney. I've got real estate background at uni, so in between that and work, and I'm also doing a lot of stuff as well. But I'll speak on behalf of the PNG Facebook and social media community, because I'm administrator of a couple of groups, and we feel that we had a massive effect in the change of government in Papua New Guinea.
Sure.
We kept the former regime on their toes, and we spoke out a lot about the old regime. So it was like you watch a bad movie and the clouds and the darkness sort of gave way to sunlight and sunshine. So, Uluk Maya, a leader of your people from Palamanda, and the Gigiri Laitabo prophecy coming through, and you're translating that on the national scene. So congratulations on that. It's refreshing to have you as Prime Minister with your new team, young leaders whom Papua New Guinea represent. So I feel confident I'm speaking on behalf of a whole lot of Papua New Guineans. I welcome Brian Kramer here. He's one of our mouthpiece.
If I could bring you to the question, sir.
Yeah. So that's the congratulation part, and Mrs. Marape. Now, the question for me is, will PNG have a sovereign wealth fund? I met Zana Nagusma, Prime Minister of East Timor, in Sydney. He was kind enough to give me 5 minutes. We spoke, and that's when I learned East Timor had a sovereign wealth fund. And that news and his photo of him and I was posted in the front page of national paper. The O'Neill government responded, and you were part of that government, and you passed a bill on the PNG Sovereign Wealth Fund. So under your prime ministership, will you have a PNG Sovereign Wealth Fund? And like Jack Ma says, you don't have to put too much money because PNG is dead burden right now. Small is beautiful, in the words of Jack.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
All right, the intention of Sovereign Wealth Fund has always been there, and it's one of our key benchmarks in our government will be a clear dividend policy from all our state-owned enterprises, as well as our state businesses, and a little percentage of what we earn will go towards saving for the future. A greater percentage come to support our budget right now. Our budget is at such a state where we don't have enough room for savings, but the principle behind saving for the future is there, and we will deploy or utilize the sovereign wealth fund intention we've built up in the last government, but our government will clearly have its signature structure put in place in a sovereign wealth fund regime that we want to set up. As I said, we will define the dividend policy for our companies, and a little bit of that will go towards saving for the future.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are many more questions. I'm afraid we're going to have to end there. The PM makes a very particular point of being punctual, and also he has a very important event to go to. He's a keen rugby league fan. In fact, one of the PM's brother was a Kumul in the PNG rugby league team for many years, and next stop is Shark Park, where he's going to watch the North Queensland Cowboys take on the Cronulla Sharks in the presence of the Cronulla Sharks' number one ticket holder. So he has to get out there to see the PM, but first of all, let me call on my colleague Jonathan Pryke to move a vote of thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Prime Minister, I'll be brief. You've already spent thousands of miles travelling around Australia this week, many more miles than most Australians would do in a lifetime, and as Michael noted, you've got a very important agenda ahead of you this evening. Here at the Institute, we have deep affection for your country and your people. We are frequent guests in your country, and we have many more trips planned this year. The one I'm particularly excited for is when we'll bring Australia Papua New Guinea Emerging Leaders Dialogue back to Papua New Guinea this year and taking it for the first time outside of Port Moresby. So we look forward to engaging with your government on that visit and with many more visits to come. In the meantime, on behalf of everyone in this room, let me say thank you very much for your time here this evening, and we wish your government all the best with your ambitious agenda. So thank you, True, Lukumu. Go Cowboys tonight, no diplomatic incidents. And ladies and gentlemen, James Marape.
Can I just say thank you?
Please.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, everyone, for showing up. We really appreciate your time tonight and the conversations we've had. Thank you, Jonathan and Michael and the team here for allowing me to be part of yours. I didn't come myself. I have, of course, my wife, Rachel. But more importantly, I have amongst us a few ministers who are here. Our Police Minister, the Honourable Brian Kramer. Brian, if you can show yourself. Yes. We have Vice Minister assisting me, the Honourable Manasseh Makiba. You can stand up probably if you don't. I got Governor of Hela Province, the Honourable Philip Undialu. He owns him and Governor Powi. Where are you, Governor Powi? They house the PNG LNG project, and they were able to visit the Woodside, Pluto, and Northern Shelf site yesterday with a few other governors. I got Governor Jiwaka, Dr. William Tongap. His province has some of the biggest coffee estates in the world, so to speak. We're trying to go into coffee in a big way. 5 years from now, we'll be flooding the Australian market with PNG coffee. trust me. We have Governor Robert Agrobe from the Central Province. His province currently sits the our LNG refinery. Our Minister for Defence, Honourable Saki Soloma. Our defence will be proactive in many civil activities, including taking charge of disaster and our national volunteer services. And we're putting him in charge of those sector. And of course, our Minister for Commerce and Trade, who will be working on our SME program up there. So he's with us, the Honourable Wera Mori. And it'll be unfair of me not to mention our two High Commissioners, High Commissioner Australia to PNG, a friend of PNG, Honourable Bruce Davis, His Excellency Bruce Davis. I've conferred your honorary honourable status. And of course, His Excellency John Kelly, PNG's High Commissioner to Australia. Governor Charlie Benjamin, Governor of Manus. Manus, you know, much talk about Manus with Governor Charlie Benjamin of Manus. By the way, Manus is a very beautiful part of our world. Manus has the most peace-loving people, globally speaking. And when first discussion on Haslim Sika came about and we were branding Manus as an island infested with crime and all this sort of thing, it's far from reality. Other places in PNG can have those titles, but not Manus. Manus is the best place in our country. And I've declared Manus as a tax-free province for us to attract investment into Manus, in the hospitality space, agriculture space, in the fishery space. Any one of you pick up his card and find investment in Manus. You'll enjoy tax-free status in Manus. God bless everyone. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thank you.